Chapter 21. "I don't care what Handor would have wanted," snarled Datar Ermion. "What I want is to ply him for information on Andoran's defenses, to watch his face as he realizes what has befallen his kingdom, to laugh as he... The Lich seemed to remember himself, and, more crucially, the audience of undead gathered around him in the ruined hall of Highwatch's keep. He unclenched his fist and stood up straighter. "Well, it's no matter. The point is, Handor's wishes for his afterlife are irrelevant. He should be raised as a zombie from my army." Tyrann Urthos watched Genevieve squirm under the Lich's steely glare.
"Well, right.
The spectral woman fumbled over the words, trying to find the right way to say the wrong thing.
"The thing is, we have our best vampires and wights looking at the king's body. Good people. Great necromancy. Really smart."
Datar waved impatiently. "Yes, yes, out with it."
"He's been thoroughly consecrated," blurted Genevieve. "It's like he was blessed by a high priest in death or slain by a paladin. The ghouls wouldn't even try taking a bite out of him. The vampires want to drop him down a deep pit, and even then, the hole will probably turn into a sacred site within a few years."
"Enough." Datar paused in a manner that suggested he would have taken a deep breath, were it possible. "Very well. It seems all of our effort to raise the old king has been a waste of time. I hope someone else has been more productive this week." Tyrann took his cue to step forward. "Lord Ermion," he said, holding aloft a rune-encrusted shard of stone about twice as long as his own hand. The Lich's face lit up at the sight of the stone. "The Dark Spire of Nephin!"
"Yes, Lord, I personally retrieved it," said Tyrann.
This was true, although technically he'd retrieved it from the charred remains of several members of Rudge's relic recovery team. Relatively few of the skeletons had survived the deep, trap-laden vaults beneath Highwatch. Datar waved the wormwood staff, and the stone lifted from Tyrann's grasp. It floated through the air and into Datar's skeletal hand.
"Excellent," said the Lich, staring at the dark spire. "Once again, Knight Commander, you've proven yourself most useful. I must say that it's a pleasant novelty to have such competent help. Which brings to mind, where is my son?"
Tyrann took his cue to step back, and thinking ahead, sidled behind a pillar.
"Well," demanded the Lich, "I want my son seated here at my side, or he can't ruin anything."
"We've had less success there," said Genevieve, floating forward with a curtsy.
"More bad news?" Datar's eyes glowed with a red-hot light. "Surely your troops have had enough time to locate 6 dead heroes. I was very clear about where I killed him and his companions, was I not?"
"Yes,"
the spectral woman drew out her concession.
"We found the site of the battle, Lord, but your son wasn't there. Nobody was."
"And you're sure that he hasn't, you know, joined the ranks of the zombies and just neglected to let me know?"
pressed the Lich, "skulking with the ghouls out in the courtyard without thinking to tell anyone. That's just the sort of thing my son would do." Genevieve shook her head.
"We've searched everywhere. We think your son survived."
Datar Ermion sat back as though struck.
"It can't be," he said. "I would have thought, I mean, I just assumed."
"I'm so sorry, Laird."
"No, perhaps this is my fault for being careless," said Datar.
"Nobody has to be at fault,"
offered Lady Caribay.
"Sometimes these things just happen."
"I know. You just always assume they'll happen to somebody else."
The Lich wrapped bony fingers against his jawbone.
"I wonder what has become of my son and his companions."
The undead minions around Datar were silent. It was best not to interfere when the master's mood seemed to be improving on its own.
"Well, I'm sure we'll figure it out sooner or later. My son does pop up at inconvenient moments," said Datar. "For now, we must press on toward our goal."
Andoran.
The name of the city loosed Gorm from the depths of blackness, and he slowly drifted up toward consciousness. "Greatest city on Earth, they say," said the same voice, masculine and familiar, though only vaguely so on both counts.
"Have they been here?"
asked another, more feminine voice. It also seemed familiar.
"Gods, the smell alone is enough to make you long for a dungeon. I can already get a whiff of it out here."
Gorm inhaled, and the acrid, earthy smells of Andoran's base wafted over him, though mostly he smelled horse. That explained the furry shoulder his face was pressed against, and the gentle rocking beneath him.
"Well, you won't have to endure it long," said the man. "Once we get our gold, I'm leaving town. We've tarried too long as it is." "We didn't tarry. Our cargo slowed us down."
"Of course, but that doesn't do us much good now, does it?
It's not like we could have done better. He kept falling off the horse,"
the woman complained,
"and you're the one who let him slip off to that tavern in East Upshore.
You tell that to the undead when they catch us, and see if they treat you any better for it."
"Assuming they're coming this way," said the woman.
"They are," the man replied. "Everyone said Ermion must be out for revenge on Johann the Mighty for killing him in the first place, and that was before they made Johann king.
Why would the Lich take Highwatch unless he's coming into the Freedlands?"
Gorm's brow furrowed under the weight of pressing questions. Johann was king now? What happened to Handor? He tried to remember and came up blank. The man continued, "He wants to settle the score after Johann chopped off his head all those years ago. You know, closure."
"Closure."
The woman's voice dripped skepticism.
"Closure! Mark my words, before spring is out, the undead will be on Johann's doorstep." "Well, undead threatening a city sounds like a job to me," said the woman. "Not that we'll need it after this."
"I wouldn't take that quest if I didn't have a copper to my name," said the man. "The kingdom isn't offering any premiums." Even through the haze of a descending hangover, that sounded wrong to Gorm. It must have sounded equally appalling to the woman.
"No premiums? To face a lich? Are they mad?"
"That or broke," said the man. "That ranger from the tavern last night was telling me about it. Whatever's gone wrong with the quest, they won't see many heroes take it. I'm making for the coast and buying passage down to the Empire myself." Gorm shifted his arms, with mixed results. On the downside, he discovered that they were chained together with some cheap manacles. On the upside, there was a flask already clutched in his hands. With some effort, he pulled the bottle to his lips and found it empty. The dwarf sighed. It was going to be that sort of day. He opened one eye and immediately squinted at the harsh sunlight beating down on him. He recognized some of the hovels and farms near the road. They were just outside the city, headed through the hamlets and farmsteads that would eventually thicken into the river downs. The people riding with him were still locked in conversation. "They'll need a massive army to take on the undead without heroes, and they lost half of the bannermen at Highwatch," the man opined. "I hear the remainder can hardly keep the peace in their cities."
"Maybe the old dwarven kingdoms will send troops," suggested the woman.
"The dwarves won't leave their clan homes undefended if there's no profit in it, especially as the old kingdoms are even more destitute than the Freedlands these days. You'd need a lot of gold to tempt them to face a lich." Gorm had to acknowledge that the man's characterization of his people was harsh but true. He patted at his pouches and pockets in search of another flask, but came up empty.
"Well, how about Dalin or Ruskin?
After Handor abandoned Perald to bait the lich to Highwatch, I doubt Ruskin will send a sympathy card. And Nifael doesn't think much better of Andoran. Even if either of them could send an army in time, I doubt they would."
"So there's no sizable army left in the Freedlands?" the woman asked.
"Maybe the Red Horde," chortled the man. Regret washed over Gorm like a wave at the mention of the Red Horde. He thought of the Gizvarda, and Zerthraka's death, and Tibrin, and soon all of the memories that he'd tried to drown bobbed to the surface. They swirled around his skull freely now that his recent sobriety had unleashed them.
"Well, if the gods are kind, perhaps we are wrong, and the lich will spare Andoran," said the woman.
The man just chuckled darkly. "Closure," he said ominously. "Trust me. Nobody likes to leave things unresolved." Closure. Amid the roiling memories, Gorm suddenly found purchase on the idea. He couldn't make things right, but at least he wouldn't leave them unresolved. He opened his eyes again, and he could see his rucksack swinging from his horse's side. Niln's life work was swaying inside it. He could return the scriptures to the Almatrans and make sure the young high scribe and his work were remembered by the temple. It wasn't much, but it was something.
Right,
said Gorm, heaving to a seated position and nearly startling the riders ahead of him out of their saddles.
Oh, you're awake,
said a young human with sandy hair and a broad nose. He wore mismatched armor and a cheap sword on his belt, a low-rank warrior if Gorm ever saw one. Gorm sniffed and looked around. His shield was tied to the other side of his saddlebags, but he couldn't see his weapon on his own horse.
Where's me axe?
Ah-ha! He wants his axe, Matina. Probably because his bottle is empty.
The warrior growled the last statement at another human, a slight cleric in the raiments of Musana's clergy. She looked even greener than the warrior. Gorm would have shaved his beard if they had five ranks between them.
So strange.
The cleric twisted round in her saddle and spoke through a forced smile, because I filled the bottle just this morning. As the woman turned, Gorm caught a glimpse of his axe hanging by her saddle.
Ah, there it is. Give it here, he said, scratching himself. I need to be off.
No,
the young heroes shouted in unison.
I mean, we should travel together, added the warrior.
Don't see why, said Gorm. I don't know ye from a hole in the ground, and while I appreciate any drinks you may have treated me to, it also looks like you tried to chain me.
He held up his hands and inspected the manacles. The cleric cleared her throat.
Well, we may have...
I'd have taken it personally, Gorm added loudly, if you used real chains. Like a Durham Brothers or steel golems? But a pair of old Hickmans? These things are as flimsy as they are cheap. Never knew why the tall folk buy 'em.
He flexed and twisted, and the shoddy manacles cracked open.
You don't say,
said the warrior, giving the cleric a dark look. Gorm tossed the broken manacles away.
You gave me drinks, but you brought me to Andoran. You chained me hands, but you made it easy to get out. You brought along me horse and gear, but you still haven't handed me my axe. I can't tell if you're trying to help me or turn me in for a reward, but it doesn't matter, because either way, you're really bad at it. And either way, I've a matter to attend to elsewhere. The only question is how I'm going to leave things here.
He held out his hand.
I'd prefer still alive, but it's up to ye.
The two heroes had gone as pale as ghosts. They stared at him in mute terror for a moment before the cleric reached back and retrieved Gorm's axe. After some fumbling with the straps, she handed it to the dwarf mutely.
A wise choice, said Gorm with a wink.
He patted his rucksack to make sure it was still full, then set off for Andoran with a wave to the pale newbloods. Up on the fourth tier of the city, at the Temple of Almatra, he could return the works of Niln to their rightful place. He could leave things where they'd started. He could find closure.
And that's why you came here, to bring Niln's books back.
Highscribe Pathelin tried to hide a smirk as he dropped into his chair. The office of Almatra's High Scribe was small but well furnished. The walls were lined with long shelves, all of them brimming with rolls of parchment, some blank, some full. Gorm's brow furrowed as he stepped into the High Scribe's office.
Aye, it's the work of your old High Scribe, ain't it?
Well, yeah, sure.
The High Scribe gestured for Gorm to sit in one of the chairs on the other side of his ancient oak desk. Gorm remained standing. Pathelin shrugged and put his feet up.
But look, this is all unexpected. I mean, when the acolytes told me there was a dwarf here for me, I assumed it was someone from the old dwarven kingdom begging for gold. King Forder's been asking everyone in the city for a handout for the old kingdoms. They'd do almost anything for some gold at this point. More than usual for a dwarf. No offense.
Gorm shrugged. The scribe grinned.
Still, I never would have dreamed it was you, and not just because of the wanted criminal thing, you know.
The city watch is already short on bannermen, said Gorm. Most of them ain't got time for a washed-up hero drinking in peace, and those that do don't want the headache of dealing with me.
I'd think it'd be more of a prestigious honor to bring you in than a headache, said the High Scribe.
Pretty much everything's a headache when you've taken an axe to the skull, said Gorm. But it doesn't matter. None of them have cared or been foolish enough to try me, and I won't be in the city long anyway. Just long enough to give you Niln's book.
Right, that.
The elf scratched at his long silver hair.
Thing is, we already have the Book of Niln in the library.
Aye, but this here is the second Book of Niln.
Gorm pulled the leather-bound tome from his rucksack and dropped it on the desk.
Plus select scriptures from the other prophets and all his notes on them.
An anthology, then. Wonderful, sighed Pathelin. Well, thank you. I'll take care of this.
Ain't you going to read it?
Oh, gods, no, laughed the High Scribe. The last thing I need is more scripture to read, especially not Niln's. He always took this stuff so seriously.
But why wouldn't you take it seriously? Ain't reading scriptures your job?
Okay, yes, technically, said the High Scribe. But look, nobody joins the Temple of Almatra looking for deep insights into the meaning of the universe, right? I mean, her latest scriptures are a rambling manifesto about the weasel and the marmot. Not the species, mind you. A very specific weasel and a very specific marmot.
Which ones?
I haven't a clue. But she was 2 chapters worth of specific.
The High Scribe grinned and shook his head.
They call her the Mad Queen for a reason.
Then why bother being an Almatran?
Oh, the other temples are always sending their people on quests. Even Fulgen's people are always getting divine tasks somehow, and their god doesn't speak. The All-Mother's kind of lost in her own world up there. She doesn't bother anyone much unless you stir her up, you see.
Gorm rubbed his bleary eyes.
You wanted an easy job.
Not an easy job. The easiest job, laughed the High Scribe. It's mostly state banquets and relaxing in gardens, with a bit of writing here and there. And nobody even cares what you write, because everybody knows the All-Mother isn't going to say anything of use. At least that's how it usually goes. Back when Scribe Niln was getting the goddess all excited, it was a real headache. Minus the axe, of course. Ha!
The elf leaned back in his seat and stared up at the ceiling.
Niln almost knocked me out of the High Scribe position, and at that point it was so busy I was almost ready to let him have the job. In a way, you did me a favor when you and your party... you know.
No, I don't know,
said Gorm flatly.
Oh, you know.
Pathelin drew his finger across his throat and made a choking sound. Gorm knew that he should feel angry at the implication, but any emotion, and most of his coherent thoughts, had spent the past few weeks pickling in despondent sorrow and cheap grog. He couldn't muster so much as a growl when he said,
"We didn't kill Niln."
"No, of course not," said Pathelin with a leering wink. "But if you did, it might have been a favor to, you know, some people."
"We didn't."
"Hey, nobody blames you," said Pathelin.
"Well, I suppose the palace and the bannermen do, but not the Almatrans. Don't get me wrong, we loved Niln. Great little guy. The High Priestess even had a statue of him put in the sanctuary downstairs.
But that was a suicide mission, and professional heroes kill to survive. You did what you had to do."
"We didn't kill him," said Gorm.
"Right."
Pathelin tapped the side of his nose knowingly.
"You know what? I'm just going to keep this."
Gorm picked the book back up.
"Oh? All right, yeah. Why don't you take it down to the archives for me?"
The High Scribe pointed at his wastebasket with a wide grin.
"Sound good?"
Gorm only snorted in reply and stamped out of the room. He pulled the hood of his cloak up as he made his way through the Almatran temple. Most of Andoran's citizens and bannermen were preoccupied with the coming undead horde and the turmoil in the markets, but he still tried to take some precautions when walking the city. It wasn't wise to tempt fate, especially not when fate had seemed so prone to indulgence lately. He glanced into the All-Mother's sanctuary as he passed, and his breath caught in his throat. Near the edge of the room, amidst the murals depicting Almatra's descent into madness, Gorm saw a familiar face cast in bronze. With quiet trepidation, Gorm stepped into the inner sanctum and approached the statue of Niln. The former High Scribe was depicted in a long robe, holding a book in one hand, the other outstretched in greeting. He wore a small smile that was likely intended to look serene, but seemed sad and wistful. Something in the air felt sacred, holy. Gorm had been in the sanctuary a few times before, and experienced nothing beyond a morbid curiosity about the strange artwork on the walls. But now he could sense something else in the room, a quiet power much bigger than the architecture it occupied. It made Gorm shift uncomfortably. In the distant past, he'd been a devout follower of the dwarven gods, but as his career progressed, he found it difficult to muster devotion to the governing powers of a universe that often seemed designed to kill adventurers in creatively horrible ways. After the Dungeon of Azanon, the gods seemed to turn their backs on Gorm entirely, and he returned the favor. Ill at ease as he was, Gorm couldn't pull himself away from the sculpture of his old friend. Trapped in his uncertainty, he sat down at the foot of the statue.
"Hello, Niln," he said, if only to fill the expectant silence. "I came to bring your books back to where they belong. You know, wrapping things up."
The statue stared back at him with its sad, lifeless eyes.
"I know you gave them to me, but I ain't the one in your prophecy. I know, I read it all just as you asked, and it ain't talking about me. I ain't the sort."
Gorm shook his head.
"Not that I didn't want to be, mind you. I've been trying for a year to make things right. I need to atone for what happened to ye, and to poor Tibrin, and all them orcs of the Gisvarda. But I only made a bigger mess of things."
Gorm had to look away from the statue's silent stare.
"Gods, this is like talking to Geist," he muttered. "I guess I wasn't so different from you in the end. We both wanted to do more than we could. And thrice cursed all, ye had me believing it was possible. Not that I was the seventh hero or anything, but just that we were destined for something, believing we could save the world."
He glanced to the base of the statue, where Niln's epitaph was engraved in the granite. Beneath the scribe's name was a citation from Almatrin scripture, the Book of Thyrus, chapter 12, verse 2. It could have been Niln's favorite passage, or perhaps a common invocation for the Almatrin dead. He looked up at the statue, and from where he sat, Niln's frozen gesture looked much like an invitation. With a resigned sigh, Gorm opened Niln's leather tome to the notes on other prophets and flipped to the Book of Thyrus. "As the sun cannot comfort thee in the dead of night, knowledge cannot be thy only comfort, for there will always be questions."
"Illuminating as ever," Gorm muttered with a deep scowl.
He searched the margin for notes and found one written in a small, tight script.
"It has been here all along. I see it now. Rabala, chapter 6, verse 3.
"What's been here?" Gorm wondered.
He flipped to the Book of Rabala and found the cited verse. Next to it was another note, though it was written in a looser hand.
"For too long I sought to know my destiny. Ephraim, chapter 19, verse 22.
The thought sounded incomplete, so Gorm found the Book of Ephraim and looked for another note in the margins.
"I wished to take hold of the prophecy of the seventh hero. Pathalil, chapter 7, verse 1.
Now Niln's handwriting was hurried and scrawling, and little gobbets of ink were hastily splattered below the note.
"It's one thought," Gorm realized. "They're all connected."
He could almost see the high scribe caught in the throes of epiphany, hastily scribbling notes and related verses down as he flipped back and forth through the scriptures, his handwriting getting faster and looser with every page. Gorm wondered what had excited the priest so.
"Only one way to find out,"
Gorm muttered as he pulled a stub of charcoal pencil from his pack and a loose sheaf of parchment from Niln's notes. Sitting with his back to the statue, he diligently hunted down the fragments of Niln's revelation and transcribed them in his own rigid, angular script, omitting the scriptural references.
"It has been here all along. I see it now. For too long I sought to know my destiny. I wished to take hold of the prophecy of the seventh hero, to wield fate as man holds up his sword. It was all folly, and I a fool. Destiny is not wielded as a weapon. Destiny cannot be forced or negotiated with or convinced. Destiny cannot be known. And so I cannot find my answers. I have nothing but the All-Mother's prophecies. But is that not enough?"
"Don't seem like much to me," Gorm murmured.
"The Falcon Lady has said that her words will come to pass. The Dark Prince will rise, the seventh hero will appear, the world will be saved. This cannot be accomplished by mortal hands, least of all by mine. Her holy words are not a map that leads to a destination. They are signs to show that we are in the right place, as we walk our own paths. They remind us that all will be as it should, even when we cannot see how."
Gorm thought that a novel idea. Most of the heroes he knew approached prophecy as a formula, a set of detailed instructions along the lines of place object of legend A into slot B on sacred altar C and wait for the path to treasure D to appear. I will not pretend at fighting. That path is for Gorm and his fellows. I will not pursue a destiny that is not mine to command. I will play my own part. It struck Gorm that Niln must have scrawled this manifesto in the final days, or even hours, before he left the party and was murdered. It could have been the last thing he ever wrote. He bit back the sorrow rising in his throat and turned to the next verse. I will help the downtrodden in my way. I will remember the virtues. I will give strength to the weary. I will lift up the broken. I will be a hope in the darkness, because I know better than any there is not always a light at the end of the tunnel. That is why you must carry a torch. Gorm's hands shook as he stared at the parchment. The only sound was the pounding of his heart and the low rumble of his universe quietly rearranging itself around the words on the page. There is not always a light at the end of the tunnel. That is why you must carry a torch. He'd almost let the darkness around him snuff him out completely, just because he couldn't see a way out of his current predicament. But encroaching gloom was more of a reason to keep burning, to shine brighter, and a berserker didn't need a torch to do it. A berserker was one with the fire. Deep in the cold void within Gorm, something sparked. He looked up at Niln, and now the statue's permanent gesture seemed to extend a helping hand. Gorm took hold of the outstretched palm and hauled himself to his feet. Thank ye, he said. I needed a reminder. A plan was forming, forged in the bright and furious blaze of Gorm's rekindled spirit. A wide grin spread over his face. Or perhaps he bared his teeth. Sometimes even he couldn't tell which it was. Scribe Pathelin had just settled into his chair with a cup of honeyed tea when he heard a low thump from behind him. When he turned to find the source of the noise, he noticed that the window to his left was wide open, its curtains flapping in a spring breeze. The elf paused to ponder that for a moment, then turned back to his tea just in time for a fist to slam into the right side of his jaw and send him sprawling to the floor. "You scream for the guards and they're only gonna find your corpse. Not if you understand," said Gorm Ingerson, pushing the high scribe's chair out of the way as he advanced. Pathelin nodded as he propped himself up on his elbows, his eyes wide and watery. "I'm here to set the record straight." The dwarf stomped up to the prone scribe and pointed his axe at his face. "I don't give a rat man's arse what you believe about your goddess and her writing, but I'll be thrice cursed before I let you go around spewing lies about me. So, if you like having a spine without any right angles, there's two things you better well understand." Pathelin stared cross-eyed at the shining blade and whimpered something unintelligible. "First off, I've never killed a high scribe. And second, just because I ain't killed one, doesn't mean I won't. You understand?" "Ish," said the high scribe, nodding vigorously. "Good," said the dwarf with a toothy smile. "Now, this here's the second book of Niln, including his collected notes and commentary on the other prophets. I'm lending it to you so you can get it properly copied and archived and whatever else you'd do for an important book. And you can bet it's important, because I'll be back for it as soon as I've visited some old friends." Barty Fisser stepped up to a small door in a side street of Lowly Heights. It was a simple oak door in a brick building, notable only for a few small metal plates fixed to various parts of its surface. One of the plates, specifically the one in the middle of the door at eye level, was engraved with the words, "Barty Fisser, Assassin." The plaque, Barty often remarked, was to keep away any wandering thieves or curious kids who might sneak into the workshop. Threats and deterrence were a crucial part of being an assassin. Of course, another important part of being an assassin was backing those threats up, which accounted for how cautiously Barty approached the door, even in his hurry. The old man carefully inserted a large brass key into the lock, rotated it counterclockwise, counted to three under his ragged breath, and then twisted it again by half a turn. He withdrew his hand a second before a tiny blade snapped out above the keyhole, jabbing the air where his thumb had been a moment earlier. Then he pulled the key from the lock and hooked it over the exposed blade, which ratcheted down like a switch. Gears clanked into life within the door.
"Come on, come on," Barty muttered impatiently.
The other metal panes in the door slid open, each revealing a unique mechanism. Barty attacked them with tempered impatience. He rotated the left dial to the number 16, pulled three levers in precise succession, tapped out a specific sequence on three glowing stones, and rotated the right dial to 4. He took a step back as another mechanical blade stabbed out of the door, this one at eye level, and then flicked a switch that retracted both of the weapons. Finally, he set the dials back to 0, tapped the central glowing stone, waited for the lock to click open, and slammed his face into the door 3 times. The last step was involuntary, and entirely due to the meaty hand that gripped the back of Barty's head as though trying to crush a ripening melon. The assassin choked back a sob.
"Hello, Barty," said his assailant.
"Gorm Ingerson,"
Barty fumbled, feebly struggling against the dwarf's grip.
"I didn't know you were in town."
"Oh, I'd assumed you heard."
Gorm spoke in a casual, almost friendly tone, but he didn't loosen his grip.
"Why else would you be trying to scamper off like a rat down a hole?"
"Well, you know," said Barty limply, "the new king says we should do everything we can to keep the city safe. In my line of work, that's easiest done by vacating it." "Speaking of your line of work, what do you know about this?"
Gorm held up a flat piece of metal that he immediately recognized as a small armor plate from a mechanical assassin.
"Wouldn't know anything about that," said Barty, avoiding looking directly at the plate.
"Really? I would if I was ye."
The dwarf pushed the door open with the assassin's face.
"Let's have a chat inside."
Barty renewed his struggles with frantic desperation.
"No, stop, there's more—"
He was cut off, nearly literally, by a massive blade that swung in a wide arc in front of them. A few of Barty's silver whiskers drifted down to the dusty floor.
"Bones, that was a big one," laughed Gorm. "What's next? Well, I suppose there's only one way to find out."
"Stop!" shrieked Barty. "You don't understand what will happen if I don't disarm the system."
"True enough," growled the dwarf, "but I'm fairly certain whatever it is will happen to ye first." "All right, all right. I did it. The pay was good, and you don't say no to Mr. Flynn,"
Barty cried, his hands flailing feebly.
"Just let me get to that panel over there, and I swear I'll confess. I'll do anything."
"It's good of you to say as much, Barty," said Gorm. "As it happens, I'm in need of a favor."